أشد الحياة.
Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 2, Chapter 2, Text Number 27.
Na yatra sukha na charana mricho. Tasjit. Sometimes, yet, because of chit, consciousness, tataha, therefore, ada, compassion, kripaya, out of heartfelt sympathy, anidam vidam, of those who are ignorant of the process of devotional service. Duranta, unsurpassable. Dukkha, misery. Prabhava, repeated birth and death. And darshanat, by successive experience. Translation. In that planet of Satchaloka, there is neither bereavement, nor old age, nor death. There is no pain of any kind, and therefore there are no anxieties, save that sometimes, due to consciousness, there is a feeling of compassion for those who are unaware of the process of devotional service, who are subjected to unsurpassable miseries in the material world. Report by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Foolish men of materialistic temperament do not take advantage of successive authorized knowledge. The Vedic knowledge is authorized and is acquired not by experiment, but by authentic statements of the Vedic literatures explained by bona fide authorities. Simply by becoming an academic scholar, one cannot understand the Vedic statements. One has to approach the real authority who has received the Vedic knowledge by disciplic succession, as clearly explained in the Bhagavad Gita, chapter 4, verse 2. Lord Krishna affirmed that the system of knowledge as explained in the Bhagavad Gita was explained to the Sun God, and the knowledge descended by disciplic succession from the Sun God to his son Manu, and from Manu to King Ikshvaku, the forefather of Lord Ramchandra, and thus the system of knowledge was explained down the line of great sages, one after another. But in due course of time, the authorized succession was broken, and therefore, just to re-establish the true spirit of the knowledge, the Lord again explained the same knowledge to Arjuna, who was a bona fide candidate for understanding due to his being a pure devotee of the Lord. Bhagavad Gita, as it was understood by Arjuna, is also explained, Bhagavad Gita 10, 12-13, but there are many foolish men who do not follow in the footsteps of Arjuna in understanding the spirit of Bhagavad Gita. They create instead their own interpretations which are as foolish as they themselves, and thereby only help to put a stumbling block on the path of real understanding, misdirecting the innocent followers who are less intelligent for the sutras. It is said that one should become a brahmana before one can understand the Vedic statements, and this stricture is as important as the stricture that no one shall become a lawyer who has not qualified himself as a graduate. Such a stricture is not an impediment in the path of progress for anyone and everyone, but it is necessary for an unqualified understanding of a particular science. Vedic knowledge is misinterpreted by those who are not qualified brahmanas. A qualified brahmana is one who has undergone strict training under the guidance of a bona fide spiritual master. The Vedic wisdom guides us to understanding our relation with the Supreme Lord Sri Krishna and to acting accordingly in order to achieve the desired result of returning home back to Godhead. But materialistic men do not understand this. They want to make a plan to become happy in a place where there is no happiness. For false happiness, they try to reach other planets either by Vedic rituals or by spacecraft, but they should know for certain that any amount of materialistic adjustment for becoming happy in a place which is meant for distress cannot benefit the misguided man because, after all, the whole universe, with all its paraphernalia, will come to an end after a certain period. Then all plans of materialistic happiness will automatically come to an end. The intelligent person therefore makes a plan to return home back to Godhead. Such an intelligent person surpasses all the pangs of material existence like birth, death, disease and old age. He is actually happy because he has no anxieties of material existence. As a compassionate sympathizer, he feels unhappiness for the suffering materialistic men, and thus he occasionally comes before the materialistic men to teach them the necessity of going back to Godhead. All the bona fide acharyas preach this truth of returning home back to Godhead and warn men not to make a false plan for happiness in a place where happiness is only a myth. Yatra shokana jara namrichu nakti na chalvigarate kutas chit yat chitta tolta kripa yani dam vidam tadanta dukkha prava bhavam darshanat. In that planet of Satchaloka, there is neither bereavement, nor old age, nor death. There is no pain of any kind. And therefore, there are no anxieties, save sometimes, due to consciousness, there is a feeling of compassion for those unaware of the process of devotional service who are subjected to unsurpassable miseries in the material world. So here, in this chapter, the progressive path of the yogis is being described, and here at this point, the yogis, the very elevated persons, may even approach the Satchaloka planet or the planet of Brahmaloka. So here is a glorification, in effect, of the some of the characteristics of those residents of that planet, the elevated consciousness. As far as material miseries is described here, it says that there is no pain of any kind. It says there is neither bereavement, nor old age, nor death. There is no pain of any kind, and therefore there are no anxieties. So, of course, in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna states that from the highest planet down to the lowest planet, all planets in this universe are places of repeated birth and death. And as Prabhupada also points out here in the purport, that After all, the whole universe with all its power and knowledge will come to an end after a certain period. Then all the plans of materialistic happiness will automatically come to an end. So, comparatively, only at the end of the universal creation, you know, the inhabitants here may actually come to the end of their lifetime. So in that sense, but otherwise, they're not experiencing this cycle of repeated birth and death to the extent that others are on other planetary systems. And therefore, because death, of course, is the greatest anxiety out of all different types of suffering, they're relatively free from anxiety. They don't, their bodies are more subtle and more refined. They don't have the experience old age or pain such that we do. It describes here there is a type of suffering within the consciousness, that there is a feeling of compassion for those who are unaware of the process of devotional service. They see those who are suffering in material existence, and that causes them some bereavement, some suffering. There's actually a description in the Markandeya Purana. In there's a discussion, and it is described that even in heaven there is agony, because one thinks, someday I will fall from here. Indeed, from the very day that one ascends to heaven, that thought constantly goes through his mind. So, that's another type of anxiety that they, when they get to the heavenly planets, there is an understanding that, they have, just like, Indra knows that he has his position because he performed, 100 Ashwamedha Yagyas, a certain amount of pious activities that were performed. So they know that they have achieved that position through piety, but when that piety runs out, that they will descend. So that is one type of anxiety. Besides this, the hellish planets can be seen from heaven, and thus one is constantly reminded that a dark future may await him. So they know that they will descend, and there may be some anxiety as to when I, do descend, what is my destination. We know that in the story of King Nriga, he was offered by Yamaraj, would you like to enjoy the results of your piety first, or suffer the results of your impiety first? And he chose to suffer the results of his impiety, but he could have chosen to, enjoy the results of his piety, and then, he may have had to suffer later. That's what Yamaraj was indicating, that, there's there may be some residual suffering even after enjoying the heavenly knowledge. Then it describes here in the womb there is great suffering. And after being born, there is great suffering as a baby and as an old person. In youth, one suffers due to lust, envy, and anger. Old age is full of all kinds of sufferings, and the greatest suffering is the experience of death. My dear father, in this world there are thousands of miseries, and there is no real happiness. Why then should I, who am striving for liberation, endeavour to perform the religious duties mentioned in the Vedas that simply elevate one to a better material condition? So, there's a little bit further understanding. There's, there's some mental suffering. Here, it describes that in youth one suffers due to lust, envy, and anger. We see that some of the demigods, such as Indra, also, experience a certain amount of suffering in their lives as a result of being envious, such as in the fourth canto, where Indra wanted to steal the sacrificial horse from King Prithu so that he couldn't perform the 100th Jagya. There was some envy of the Brajavasis who were not worshipping him, and of course all of this, some anger, so and he had to suffer due to these materialistic qualities that overcame him. So, there is the suffering, certainly, especially on Sanchaloka. Sanchaloka, of course, is the highest for those with the most elevated consciousness. But even in some of the heavenly planets below that, there is a little bit more suffering, and on Sanchaloka there is less, but there is some within the mind like that. But after all, it all must come to an end. So therefore, Srila Prabhupada mentions here that the Vedic wisdom guides us to understanding our relationship, with the Supreme Lord Sri Krishna, and to acting accordingly in order to achieve the desired result of returning home back to Godhead. But materialistic men do not understand this. So, it describes in the Bhagavad Gita that here it's saying that the Vedic teaching ultimately is to remove the false ego or our false identification, where we see ourselves not as the eternal servant of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but we see ourselves as the master or the enjoyer of the material world. Ahankara mudhatma. And because of this false ego, we identify as the enjoyer of the material world, and therefore we suffer birth, death, old age, and disease, because we identify that I am a material product, and material products go through these different changes, six different changes. That they take birth, they grow, they remain for some time, they produce byproducts, they dwindle, and then they vanish. So all material objects. So by identifying ourselves with a material object, then a material body, then we will actually have to experience that, yes, I have taken birth, I'm growing, producing some byproducts, now I'm diminishing, dwindling, and soon I will vanish like that. So we have to, and that is suffering. So this false ego, by materialistic men, this has to be purified, or one has to come to one's ultimate pure identity as the eternal servant of Krishna. therefore, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says that I am not a brahmachari or a grihastha. I am not a vanaprastha, I am not a brahmana, I am not sannyas, I am not any of the vanas or ashrams. He says, I am not any of these. In this, here, in this verse, he's describing that Vedic knowledge. It is said that one should become a Brahmana before one can understand the Vedic statements. And this stricture is as important as the stricture that no one should become a lawyer who is not qualified himself as a graduate. Such a stricture is not an impediment in the path of progress for anyone and everyone, but it is necessary for an unqualified understanding of a particular science. So, if people are unqualified, then if they try to understand the Vedas, that will not be possible. In the same as one who is not properly trained cannot understand, you know, the principles of law. They say that one is a great fool if they try to represent themselves. You know, if someone goes to court and they try to represent themselves in court, they're considered to be a great fool. Usually, you know, the judge will immediately look. You know, they'll stand up and they're going to represent themselves, and they're feeling that they're very proud. But the judge will usually look at them and you know, doing something very, very foolish, because they know, after vast experience, that the law is very intricate, you know, very difficult. You know. And, you know, the court system, everything is very, very difficult. It's beyond, you know, it needs a lot of training to enter into that understanding. So similarly, if one is unqualified, they cannot understand the Vedas. And if an unqualified person tries to understand the Vedas and then tries to teach that Vedic knowledge, then that is even a greater disaster for, you know, the common mass of people. So one needs to become, the stricture is that one should become a Brahmana in order to, you know, teach the Vedas. I mean, the Kshatriyas and the Vaishyas, they also take knowledge in, they also take training in Vedic knowledge under the Brahmins. The Brahmins will teach, the Vaishyas and the Kshatriyas, they will also learn aspects of Vedic knowledge, but under the guidance of the Brahmins. You know, is actually the duty of the Brahmins to teach the Vedic knowledge. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is saying that even if one comes to that perfectional platform as a human being, because actually if one attains the platform of being a Brahmana, and especially a sannyasi Brahmana, because the sannyasi is considered to be even the guru of all the Brahmanas, of all the orders, the Brahmanas, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, and Sudras. So, a sannyasi Brahmana is considered to be the ultimate perfection. If you follow the Vedas through, and you come to the ultimate perfection of human existence, you can come to that perfectional stage of being a sannyasi Brahmana. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is rejecting that position is still the position of false ego. In fact, I was listening to a lecture the other day, Srila Prabhupada was saying that even if you're Lord Brahma, from Lord Brahma down to the lowest living entity, actually all of them are somewhat criminals in the prison house of material existence. Brahma identifies himself not as the eternal servant of the Supreme Lord, but as Brahma, the great demigod. That is also a position of false ego. That is also entrapment. Prabhupada was making the point that the fact that one becomes a Brahma in the material world means that one is fallen. You know? And he gave the example that Gandhi, that even Gandhi, who is considered to be a very exalted person generally throughout the world. But when he was in prison, he was still considered to be a prisoner, a criminal in the, you know, justice system. Although he certainly was, you know, had a different level of ordinary prisoners. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is teaching us that even that perfectional stage is rejected, that is not liberation. One is still under the false ego as long as one identifies with any of the materialistic identities other than I am the servant. So then he says, Guru Bhattu Parikamalayom, Dasa Dasa Das. He says that I am the servant of the servant of the servant of the Krishna, the maintainer of the gopis. As Srila Prabhupada says here, that the Vedic wisdom guides us to understanding our relation with the Supreme Lord, Sri Krishna, and to act accordingly in order to achieve the desired result of returning home back to Godhead. So, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is indicating that the Brajavasis, as we sing, Jaya Radha Madhava, Kunja Vihari, Gopi Janavalava, Giri Jaridari, Yashoda Nandana, Brajajana Ranjana, that the Brajavasis, they are situated as the most dear. Now, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he's describing that, you know, we accept any other identification, we are not liberated. We are conditioned soul. We are entrapped by false ego. We should follow in the footsteps of the Brajavasis, that we see ourselves only as our only position is to serve or to please Lord Sri Krishna. He cites the Brajavasis because they are the highest in the mood of serving the Supreme Lord. The Brajavasis, comparatively, there is no mood of service, no form of service which is superior to theirs. And amongst the Brajavasis, you know, he mentions particularly Gopi Bhattu, the gopis. So Krishna, the Supreme Lord, he is very, very pleased. These Brajavasis are very, very dear to him, because they have no other thought except to please the Supreme Lord Krishna. They do so in a way which is incomparable to any other, you know, devotees. That is the topmost. So he is given the topmost as this is the perfection of stage. Srila Prabhupada, I'm commenting on this verse. He says that, you know, trying to understand what is their position, that in all circumstances, the Brajavasis, you know, they only think of Krishna, and they only depend upon Krishna, and they only love Krishna. They don't know that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, nor is that a consideration. They love Krishna more than God or Lord Vishnu. They don't love Krishna because he is God. They love Krishna out of natural, spontaneous love. Not for any purpose, that you are God. Just like we see with the Pandavas, that they had so many difficulties, so many tribulations. But Prabhupada mentions, although Krishna, they understood Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, because as we described here in this purport, that Arjuna said that, yes, I accept you are the Supreme Personality of Godhead. They never ever said, you know, we've got so many difficulties. Krishna is our friend. Let us get him to help us. Let's, you know, take some favors from Krishna. They depended upon Krishna, but they were only trying to serve Krishna, not derive service from Krishna. That is the point. Even despite all the, they never asked, you know, you're God, we've heard this, you know, just a little favor, you know, we've got this problem. Like this, like that. They depended upon him, but Still, even knowing he was the Supreme Person of Godhead, they didn't ask him, you know, constantly, you give us this favor, we've got this problem like that. They just always thinking how to please Krishna. The gopis and the Brajavasis, they're not even considering that he's God or not God. He is the cowherd boy of Vrindavan, the most lovable object. and they meditate upon him, they think of him always, and whenever there's some difficulty, they just immediately think of Krishna. Just as when, you know, there was a fire that came through Vrindavan, and they immediately, you know, Krishna, Krishna. And Krishna just swallowed up. Because the Brajavasis, the servants of the Lord, are very, very dear to Krishna, and therefore he always gives them protection. He gave the Brajavasis protection, he gave the Pandavas protection. Although they didn't ask, he still protected them because there is that reciprocation of love. Srila Prabhupada described that the devotee is very careful not to take, you know, service from the Lord, always trying to offer service. But Krishna he loves his devotees so much that he's always trying to offer them some service. So there's a competition that neither will accept service and both are wanting to serve. So it's a reciprocation of love. And he tells that story of Rupa Goswami and Sanatana Goswami, that Rupa Goswami wanted to offer his older brother, Sanatana Goswami, some nice service because he was thinking he's such a nice devotee of Krishna, and he was thinking maybe I could make some nice, you know, foods offered to Krishna and offer him a nice feast like that. So then he was thinking like that, and as he was thinking like that, soon after this young girl came by and she said, oh, you know, Prabhu, we have this foodstuffs left over, we had some, you know, festival in our village, we have some things left over, perhaps we'd like to make a donation to the sadhu. So Rupa Goswami was very happy and took that. Of course he cooked that food because the Vaishnavas, pretty much every devotee is very good cook, and some more than others. Anyway, Sanatana Goswami came along and accepted this prasadam, and then he was discussing that, you know, we live in this forest, we live under a tree each night, we have the loincloths, and where did you get this opulent, you know, foodstuffs to make this nice? And Rupa Goswami told about the girl that came past. And then Sanatana inquired more about her description. And then he understood, this is Radharani. And he became very angry at Rupa Goswami. You know, as Prabhupada says, oh, you know, you've practically killed me. Like, he was mortified. He felt that, you know, as mortified as you could possibly be. Because he was saying, you know, we are trying to serve Krishna and Srimati Radharani, and you've put me in a position where I have accepted service. That I am the enjoyer of service. So he was very, very disturbed like this. But Prabhupada mentions that this pastime shows that, you know, the devotees, that they don't want to accept service from Krishna. That mood of being the servant is the essence of their existence. That's where they derive transcendental bliss, that I am, you know, offering Krishna this, very attentively doing the service, and I see Krishna is pleased. Yes, that is my pleasure. And they will not accept service from Krishna. And Krishna is thinking, these devotees of mine are such nice devotees, I must offer them some service like this. You know, so there is that reciprocation. So, therefore, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he says, Gopi Pato Karakamna Yoga, Dasa Dasana Das. And Srila Prabhupada, again, commenting on this verse, he says, you know, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is saying, Dasana Dasana Das. Don't try to be a gopi. In another lecture, he said that actually there is some Mayavad tendency that's also stated in the Nectar Devotion. You want to be Nanda Maharaj, you want to be Yashoda, you want to be Radharani, you want to be Lalita, you know, you want to be. This is again, it's not the mentality that yes. I shall be the enjoyer of Krishna as a gopi. There's the materialistic tendency, you know, pokes its nose into the spiritual atmosphere. That you know, I shall enjoy Krishna as a gopi, like this, or, you know, like this. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, you know, that. Dasana, dasana, das. That the liberated position is that we should be the servant of the servant of the servant of the gopis who are maintained by Krishna. And therefore, we see the example of Uddhava. Uddhava, he went to Vrindavan and he Krishna gave him that opportunity. Krishna wanted Uddhava to deliver a very confidential message that these gopis and these brajavasis, that Krishna said, I am indebted to them. I cannot repay their service. It is such of a high caliber, so pure. There is no trace at all that they are trying to derive some, you know, personal gain. It is just spotless, pure, transcendental love. It is of such a caliber that I cannot repay that. So he wanted to deliver. But because I cannot repay that, in essence, they have purchased me and therefore they are never without me. I am there with them. Because they have purchased me by that love. So Krishna wanted to Uddhava to deliver this confidential message, but he wanted Uddhava to rise up to experience. You know, you want to learn this process of love, you see this love of the Brajavasis. And when Uddhava saw that love firsthand of the Brajavasis, you know, he saw Radharani talking in madness to a bumblebee, and they were just, you know, they were mad with love, you know, intensely mad with love. And he prayed that I would like to be, you know, some grass or a herb in Vrindavan. If I, you know, then the dust from their lotus feet will trample on my head. This is the perfection of stage. You know, he's not saying, let me be a gopi, let me be, you know, let me be the servant of the servant of the servant of the dust of the lotus feet of the Brajavasis. So this teaching of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, therefore Prabhupada says here in the purport, he says that he says the Vedic wisdom guides us to understanding our eternal relation with the Supreme Lord Sri Krishna, and to acting accordingly in order to achieve the desired result of returning home back to Godhead. It's not enough to understand the Vedic aphorism, Aham Brahmasmi, I am Brahman. If one does not come to the point of understanding that I am the eternal servant of the Supreme Lord, one will actually fall down from that position. That is described by Lord Brahma in the 10th canto, that But because of not taking shelter of the lotus feet, you know, one has no shelter. One comes to the platform of Brahman, but there's no shelter. Just like Prabhupada always gives the example, you know, if they send the Sputniks, as he says, and, you know, the rockets, if they don't have shelter, they must, you know, come down. They must attain some shelter. You know, the astronauts go up, but because there's no shelter, they must come back. They must fall down. So the spirit soul may come to that platform of even Brahman realization, which is the, you know, understanding that the Brahmanas may have, and, you know, the sannyasis, the transcendentalists. But unless they come to that point, then still, you know, there is the materialistic tendency goes there that I could not enjoy in the material world, so I will enjoy as God. I am Brahman, I am the supreme Brahman. You know, that tendency is there, the tendency that I am the enjoyer, somehow or another. So, this teaching is very, very elevated teaching. In the Bhagavad Gita, it says that after many, 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 many births, one comes to this understanding that Vasudeva, Lord Sri Krishna, is everything and surrenders unto him. And in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, you know, his last instruction, which is really the essential instruction of the Bhagavad Gita, you surrender unto me. I am the master. You are the servant. You know, you surrender and serve. I don't. After many, many, many lifetimes, you know, one comes to that position. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's teaching begins from that point. Jivera Svarupahuya Nitya Krishna Das. From that point, after many, many, many lifetimes, very even difficult for the yogis and the transcendentalists to understand, even they're reaching, you know, Satchaloka. If one comes to that understanding, that is the beginning of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's teaching. So therefore, we can understand how elevated is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's teachings. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is so kind that he distributes that understanding, love of God, freely for one who just chants the holy names of the Lord. But Prabhupada says here that one should understand our relation with the Supreme Lord Krishna and act accordingly in order to achieve the desired result. So it's not just theoretical. And that understanding that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, I am his eternal servant, that beginning understanding must be there. But if one wants to achieve the result of going back to Godhead and attaining love of God, one must act on that understanding. Practically, one must actually serve Krishna. Prabhupada mentions on this point that people, you know, all over the world, they criticize or they, you know, wonder or they become envious. You know, how are these devotees, they chant, they dance, they eat prasadam, and yet they're living in these, you know, opulent, they're having these wonderful lives. You know, we are working, slaving, you know, suffering, you know, in our work, in our offices, in our factories, and, you know, these Hare Krishnas are living this wonderful life. And that is because as one practices Krishna consciousness, that one takes up that mood that yes, I am the eternal servant of Krishna and acts upon it, then Krishna reciprocates that yes, I am the maintainer of those who take shelter as the servant of the servant of the servant, you know, of the gopis. And this is our great fortune, that the Goswamis of Vrindavan, they were gopis from Vrindavan. Various acharyas, many of them are in that mood. Some are, you know, in friendship, some are in Madhurya, but the Brajabasi mood, our acharyas. And by us becoming the servant of the servant of the servant in our disciplic succession, we are taking that mood of becoming the servant of the servant in the line of the Brajabasis. So when we our prayer, our only prayer is that let me just become the most attentive servant of the servant of the servant, and that is my perfection. And that by doing that, because Krishna is the maintainer of the Brajavasis, we are the servant, the servant, the servant, you know, as far as we can, 100 times the servant, therefore this is the, and we are acting upon that, therefore Krishna is happy to maintain the devotees. Therefore, this is the liberated, or the perfection stage of life, is to be the servant, the servant of the servant, of Lord Sri Krishna, to act in that mood of service as attentively and diligently and with as much love and devotion as one can, and always depend upon Krishna with full confidence. Mm. That is the liberated consciousness. Mm. So I'll leave it there if anyone has any questions. There's a nice description in the, it's the third canto, chit, consciousness. Consciousness. chit, of course, when we say chit, we're meaning the soul, you know, because chit means that which is spiritual, chit shakti, which is referring to. But in this world, you know, that chitta, chitta refers to the consciousness, which is still somewhat covered. You know, even at the beginning of creation, you know, even before the manifestation of Ahankara, the covering of Ahankara, it describes that, you know, the living entity, because their spirit soul injected into the material world, there is a vague understanding of God, Vasudeva, the Supreme Lord. There's, you know, there's a faint realization of the Supreme Lord Vasudeva. And gradually, as the Ahankara, you know, covers the living entity, then that, you know, they're more and more covered. But the living entity, the chit refers that the living entity is separate from matter. You know, the living entity is spiritual by nature, and therefore has no real relationship with matter. And the, as you know, you're indicating even in that question, that the feelings and you know, consciousness, awareness, emotions, ultimately they're coming from the soul, but because they're covered by the material energy, you know, those emotions are somewhat perverted, in that those emotions are, you know, according to you know, the material coverings. Pure consciousness means that there is no more material covering, and that one's the feelings which actually come from the soul, the consciousness which comes from the soul, is just directly in direct association, contact with the Supreme Personality of God, with the spiritual energy like that. The chit is indicating the spirit soul, and these moods of compassion and sympathy, ultimately they're all emotions coming from the soul, but they're covered by the material energy. Yeah. Did you have some energy?
No, that's the answer.
Mm.
It was just a choice. That was a choice of two words.
Mm. Yes, yes, yeah, chit, consciousness. Any other questions?
Mm.
I'll take one for the ladies, I'll just say one for the ladies, I'll come back.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Thanks for a nice class. Yeah. I was just wondering, how do you reconcile this verse with 8:16 in Bhagavad Gita? Brahma Bhavana Lokha Narayati Mojana. From the highest planet in the material world to the lowest, all are places of misery.
Yeah.
We're in a pit of death and death take place.
Mm-hmm.
This is Krishna's instruction to Arjuna, and he's categorically saying everything, it's all misery. And then this verse is saying there's no misery in that, all death,
mm-hmm.
Satya Loka. So Satya Loka in the material world.
Yeah, Vishwanath Chakravarti, the core, he mentions in his commentary that this verse, in essence, is a in a covered way, it's actually glorifying the residence of Satya Loka. That is the intention. You know, more so than giving a detailed description of the existence on Satya Loka. But, you know, in Satya Loka, there's no death in the sense that only when you get to the end of material creation, then, as will be described in these verses and some of the verses in the third canto, you know, they enter within Lord Brahma and some are liberated and some sort of liberated but come back. Some here, some in the next verse are described, but even from there they just directly, straight away push through the material coverings and go to Krishna. So, that's way at the end of material creation. You know, it's a fundamental understanding. Therefore, Prabhupada says it here, that after all, the whole universe with all its paraphernalia will come to an end after a certain period. That's a fundamental understanding of material existence. You know, from the very basic teachings of the Vedas, you know, material creation and temporary. So that's fundamentally understood. So, at that point, certainly, there is death. But not like on other planets where they're actually, you know, that from their point they see them, oh, they've had to lose that body and change, you know, they're actually undergoing, you know, from one body to another. So they're seeing that on the various, on the other planet, but they're not experiencing it until the very end of material creation. So it's like that. But that's a fundamental understanding, of course, which is taken for granted. In one sense, and you know, that they certainly don't have the pains also that they do, but therefore, you know, Krishna is Krishna is saying that all the places of birth, death, old age and disease, you know, all the places of misery wherein repeated birth and death take place, from the highest to the lowest. Repeated birth and death, in the sense that, you know, if Brahma does not go back to Godhead and attain ultimate liberation after the whole, so he hasn't really experienced death, material, you know, worlds are wound up within the body Mahavishnu, and if he has not attained the qualification, he will take birth again. So that, therefore, within material existence, even for Brahma, there's repeated birth in that sense, but in another universal creation.
So it's the same truth, but there's a difference in perspective. So in Gita, Krishna may be giving like the bird's eye view of the entire creation, whereas this verse seems to be giving a relative view from our perspective, that like from an earthly perspective, there's no bereavement at such a level as almost like winter, because of there's no bereavement, no old age, no death. Mm-hmm. So it's maybe a difference in viewpoint and perspective.
Well, it's a postgraduate understanding of the Bhagavad Gita that we said that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's teachings begin from where the Bhagavad Gita leaves off. So that fundamental understanding has been stated by Krishna that all places in the material world are places of repeated birth and death. So that's a fundamental understanding already stated, and therefore, notwithstanding that fact, there is this statement here, therefore, which is, as Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur is stating, that not discounting the fundamental understanding, you know, there is relatively, there is deathlessness, and, you know, and comparatively, that planet compared to any other place in the material world, is they're not really suffering, you know, until the very, very end. You know, so in other words, their whole existence is without so much suffering till the very, very end, in that sense. So it's taken in context with preliminary understandings.
Thank you.
I think perhaps somewhere else in this section of the Bhagavatam, but such a work is
yes, yeah, yeah. That's right. I think you know, sort of hints at that here. That so talking about those in Satchaloka, that he is actually happy because he has no anxieties of material existence. But a compassionate sympathizer, as a compassionate sympathizer, he feels unhappiness for the suffering materialistic men, and thus he occasionally comes before the materialistic men to teach them the necessity of going back to Godhead. All the bona fide acharyas preach this truth of returning home back to Godhead and warn men not to make a false plan for happiness in the place where happiness is on the myth. So that he is suggesting that these persons from Satchaloka, they appear. And as you mentioned, I was actually thinking of that same reference this morning when I was reading that it's so they do appear as messiahs, you know, liberators, such as Jesus and so many persons like that.
I also read that somewhere else, that such a thing is practical in the spiritual world.
Yes. Right next door.
Yeah.
So you know that's a good point. You know, there's therefore there is you know a distinction between Satchaloka and all other places within the material universe. The same influences, material influences, are there, but you know, to such a slight degree that they're almost non-existent. So you know, we can take it like that. But as Krishna says, but they're still there. Don't forget that. Yeah. Thank you. So the question is, how does a devotee identify as a servant, servant of the gopis, and at the same time carry out one's functions as like grihastha, brahmana, kshatriya, vaishya, sannyas, like that. So we see that in the teachings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, that he was sannyas. He was very dedicated to his mother and his father. You know, he performed the activities as a teacher, and he was a devoted husband. You know, that he would rise early in the morning, and he would have the first thing Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would do when he rose in the morning was to discuss with his wife. You know, they would discuss, they would chat, and you know, describe the various activities that were performed in the previous day and different things that they're happening now and like that. So he was a very, very devoted husband and son. He performed the Shraddha ceremony for his father, you know, you know, very spotless as a sannyas. But at the same time, while performing these activities in order to teach the general mass of people the, you know, Vedic religious principles according to their level. So if they're on a completely materialistic point, which some were, then they would be able to follow him as a perfect brahmana, perfect sannyas, perfect grihastha, when he was like that, the religious principles. If they gradually associated, took shelter of his teachings, chanted the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, studied the Srimad Bhagavatam, associated with devotees, they would gradually see that there is another aspect that internally and externally, he is performing, he performs those Vedic injunctions which are favorable to devotional service, and those Vedic injunctions which are not favorable to devotional service, he will neglect. Therefore, for instance, we see that Advaita Acharya, when he performed the Shraddha ceremony, the Vedic injunction is that the food is offered to Lord Vishnu, and that food is going to be offered to the departed ancestors, and the main plate of prasadam is offered to the most senior brahmana. Like that. So he offered that to Haridas Thakur, who was born in a Muslim family. And Haridas Thakur is saying, well, this is not very good. You'll be criticized because I'm not even, I'm not even born in a Sudra family, or, you know, like outside of Vedic culture. I'm considered the lowest. You know. He said, no, you have all the qualifications of the most exalted personality. You have those qualifications. You may not, and then he chanted the various mantras from the Vedas. It's by qualification, not by birth. So therefore you see in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's teachings that, you know, if one develops the qualifications, then, you know, one is fit to be a Brahmin or a sannyas or, you know, whatever you like that. So therefore, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his associates, there was some Vedic injunctions which they rejected or would not follow if they were based on materialistic conceptions. He taught us that the Vedic injunctions are understood by those who have, you know, this goal of going back to Godhead. If that spiritual goal is there, then one will know, you can accept this Vedic injunction because it's helping you go back to Godhead. Reject that one, that's going to put obstacles as a servant of the Lord. You know, if you don't have that goal of going back to Godhead, you don't know what to accept and reject. And you're accepting, you know, Vedic injunctions that increase your bodily concept of life. Like that. So, you know, we accept We follow the Vedic injunctions, which are good for our devotional service and good for preaching, which means we may perform ordinary religious activities which the general mass of people will not criticize the devotees. It's favorable for them. But sometimes we also have to show the general mass of people, or you know, young devotees, that some things have to be rejected because we're trying to serve Krishna, and this injunction is getting in the way of you know, serving. And therefore, you know, the example was given by Govindadas, that he was the personal servant of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and one time Chaitanya Mahaprabhu fell asleep in the doorway. What happened was he stood over Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and went out. You know, so he sort of broke the Vedic injunction of, you know, disrespecting sannyasi and what have you. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu questioned him, and you know, he described that, you know, for your service, you know, he had to do something. He had to arrange some, you know, food or something, I forget the exact details, but for the service of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he had to leave in order to do that service. And he said that, you know, I'm prepared to go to hell for your service, but for his own personal comforts or what have you, he was not prepared to you know, transgress anything. Yeah. There's some more details there. But
to take his own prasadam,
I think he had to step back over. Like, yeah, if he wanted to have prasadam himself, he would have had to step over something, but he wouldn't do that. For his own prasadam, he wouldn't. But for the service of the Lord, he had to at one stage, yeah. So therefore, you know, it's a basic injunction which actually interfered with serving God. So he just rejected it. But for his own personal sense gratification, he would not reject it. And anything that should be followed strictly, if it was for the service of the Lord, he would follow. So, you know, that is our, you know, if we have that understanding that I'm determined to serve the servant, we will know what is favourable and what is unfavourable. If we don't have that mentality, we won't know.